Hello and welcome back to A Link to the Cast, the UK's best video games podcast that you're listening to right now. This is episode 14 and a very warm welcome to the programme, and it's another Bonestormer. Today we're going to be reviewing Lost Planet 2 on PlayStation 3. We've got Red Steel 2 available on Wii, and we go back in time and relive Mario Kart on SNES as it returns on the Virtual Console. We're also going to look at the big stories happening in the world of video games right now. First, let's reacquaint ourselves with the team. My name is Mick, and I look at all things Nintendo. There's Rick, our PlayStation 3 man. How's it going, Rick?
Hello! How are we all doing?
We're doing very good, thank you. And let's say hello as well to Brian Shelf, our man with the Xbox 360 hat on.
The Xbox 360?
Is that what I just said?
Yeah, you were the X... Yeah, and you also, at the beginning, you said it's a Bonestormer of edition. That's not correct, is it? It's Barnstormer.
No, Bonestormer. You know, on the episode of The Simpsons where Bart gets done shoplifting, he steals a game of Bonestorm, which is the big video game that that everybody wants to get hold of. And only Milhouse has it.
I was thinking that you were just being clumsy of mouth, but it turns out you're just a massive nerd.
Yeah, well, we knew this already. I said normally the Xbox 360, you're normally wearing that hat, but not today for a very good reason.
Yes, because I've not really played. Do you know, I'm just having a whole retro game thing. I could do a review of Braid, which has eaten into vast quantities of my time, but fortunately I could press X and rewind it all and get that time back. What was I saying about being nerdy? What else have I been playing? Psychonauts and on the Xbox, that was really good.
I put jokingly on Facebook that this will be your most passionate review yet of any video game of all time. Is it fair to say today you are going to review your favourite game of all time?
Well, wait for the review to find out there, Mick.
Okay, of course we're going to be reviewing the Virtual Console version of it. I don't know if I'm second guessing what you're going to say here, but it is the original SNES Mario Kart. It's been available for ages in Japan and in the States for download. You can now download it here in the UK as well. Okay, so it's this part in the show where I normally ask a question to find out more about the team, about Rick, about myself and about Brian, but we have some breaking news to get to, so we have no time for the question today, but of course that breaking news cannot beat the headline competition. Today's headline competition is related to, what shall we say, unglamorous locations that have video games related to them. Because motor racing legend Carl Fogarty could become the world superbike champion for the 5th, 6th, 7th or even 100th time as the star of a new video game. He's going to be the star of a new SBKX Superbike World Championship game for the PS3, 360 and on PC as well. Carl Fogarty will be the star of the game. Guess what? He's from Blackburn.
Nice.
How many Blackburn and Lancashire related sports stars have their own video game? Maybe Andrew Flintoff has got his own. Is that you typing away in the background, Brian? I can hear.
Yeah, I was just having a little type. Sorry about that.
Are you Googling things?
I'm Googling things.
That's cheating.
I'm Googling things so I can hopefully do a great joke. No.
Okay, so it's Carl Fogarty, a guy who's from Blackburn, the small town in Lancashire, and he's going to be the feature of his own video game. So we're looking for a headline which the tabloid newspapers may run on a story like this. Linked to the fact, you know, that he's a well-known sports star, but also that he's from Blackburn, which is a very unglamorous location, which is, you know, very different to maybe, you know, Tom Clancy, Las Vegas, anything like that, Rainbow Six. So, Brian, I'm going to get yours at the end of the show. Rick, it's the same for you, pal, so hang on in there. We'll get yours. Play along at home as well. We're looking for a headline. So you are listening to A Link to the Cast. What episode are we on now? I've completely forgotten, and I've only just said it. Ricardo, we're going to start the news section with you, because the news that we can tell people about is that you are going to E3.
Yeah! Can't wait! Yeah, I've done it once before, and that was a big year when the Wii was released, and I'm thinking this is probably going to be just as big a year, because obviously there's a lot riding on it for Sony and Microsoft this year, what with Natal and PlayStation Move coming, so it should be a pretty big one.
For people who don't understand or maybe don't know of the significance of the E3 conference, tell us a bit about what it's all about.
Well, it is the in caps, the computer games convention of the year on the planet. You know, it's held all the way out in the Staples Center, or just next door to that, in the big conference center, rather, over in California, LA. So, and they get all of the big game designers and publishers, and they basically show off the best products that they've got and the biggest things that they're going to be releasing in the next 1, 2, sometimes even 3 years. So, yeah, like I said, with so much riding on it for Microsoft and Sony, they always put on a big show for their stands anyway. I'm expecting something special from both of them this year. And, of course, Nintendo are probably going to do their best to match it as well, because the last massive E3 was, like I say, when the Wii was kind of showcased to everybody, and it was shown in the actual product spec, in the actual casing that you now have in your own homes, and that really did steal the show. So it's going to be a big one.
Yeah, Natal was demoed, I think, at the last E3, yeah. But this will be the first time where they're saying, here's the software that we've got, here's the support that we've got, here's the games that are available. It's going to be the same for Move, although maybe less advanced in terms of what they can offer. Nintendo can sometimes, though, be hit and miss at these E3s. There was a year where all they announced was the Game Boy Micro.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of wonder if they've really got anything new. Certainly, I don't think they've got any new real hardware claims this time around.
The rumours online is that this new DS is coming, the 3DS, which is the working title. But how quickly they've been able to turn something around. It might be they do a bit of a tease this year, then announce it properly next year. Maybe just give us a flavour of what it might either look like or how it might play.
I think you're absolutely right there. I imagine them to maybe have a case where they've got a mock-up of the actual handset, nothing you can get hands on with, and there'll be some 3D cinema videos of what kind of, you know, game ideas they've got going for it. I don't expect to be a massive thing for Nintendo this time until they can actually put it in your hands and say, go on, have a play. And of course, when they do finally put it in your hands to play, you can expect something special from Nintendo then. So not this year, but I'm looking forward to it when they do have it today.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to hearing about it myself. But you're going to be able to report live. It's going to be big time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for the very radio stations that this podcast goes out over their websites, we're going to be writing live updates and content, and maybe the odd little E3 diary as we go, and updating it when we're out there. We did put a few photos last time we were out of me playing Wii tennis, because it was, like I say, before the Wii had been released, and people thought, what the hell are you doing? But now everybody's got one, so it doesn't always translate in pictures, but we're going to do our best to report it that way as well.
There you go. There's Ricardo, you lucky devil man, going off to E3. We'll have full reports from E3 across the summer.
So lucky. Rick, can I just ask you a quick question? Is it true that you've been booked onto trains from Chicago to get you to LA to save money on the flight, but it's a 46-hour train journey? Is that right? I see. I think his silence speaks words there, Mick.
Indeed. That's Ricardo on his way to E3. But you know what? There's Xbox 360 news from E3, Brian Shelf, that I want to run by you, because, Natal, obviously, we just mentioned that, is going to be the big deal. But guess what? Xbox 360 Slim and Black. It's going to get a Slim Black rebrand.
Oh, nice.
It's always been a little bit too chunky, I think, the Xbox, even in its first edition.
Yeah, well, and also probably what they'll do is sort of when they brought the Xbox 360 out, and everyone went, oh, it's a little bit nicer, it's a little bit slimmer, it's a little bit neat. They didn't show the behemoth of a power unit that comes with it that's about a third of the size of the console itself, completely unnecessarily. I've got no idea why it needs such a giant power block. So no doubt they'll be exactly the same with this one, just because they won't bother redesigning that. You just tuck it behind the telly, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, presumably they've done this so that when you get Natal, because obviously Natal is a piece of hardware as well, it sort of just generally reduces the amount of kits you've got in your living room.
Yeah, true, but then it's, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a big chunky unit.
Now, regular listeners to the podcast will remember that probably about 8 months ago now, we were talking about a guy who had a CV, posted a CV online, and as part of that CV, he sort of suggested that he was working on a title, and that title was a new version of GoldenEye. Well, guess what? Because those plans and those ideas have re-emerged this week on the internet, and Activision has sparked rumours that it is planning a GoldenEye revival by registering a web domain bearing the title's name. So we sort of got a hint of this at the back end of last year. Now there's a web domain which has been sort of registered. And you think, well, does this mean we're going to have a new GoldenEye? And straight away, I hear this story and I think, brilliant. A new GoldenEye, you know, 1997 from Rare. One of the great games on the Xbox 360. You know, probably play it now. It's probably really polygony, really awful. But actually, of its time, multiplayer, absolutely superb. I'm thinking, yeah, bring it back. But then I'm thinking, actually, what would it be like if they brought it back? If they tried to sort of rehash it? Would it be any different to some of the games that we see at the moment? And actually, should we not just leave it in the past?
Well, to be honest, I was at the Bradford Film Industry Museum thing or whatever a few weeks ago. And I arrived incredibly early for what I was supposed to be going to see. And they've got this retro games exhibition there, one of which was GoldenEye. It's not stood the test of time, I'm afraid.
Go on, what was the... Because I can remember now, when you were in the bunker level, you could be in a room and you'd have troops running towards you, and they would be running at the door, but their heads would be through the door, even though their bodies were on the other side, and you could shoot them.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I mean, you still get that in games now, clipping. It's one of the contentious points, because you want to have some kind of... Because, you know, everything's built out of polygons, so it's all got sharp edges, so you need to have some artificial smoothing of stuff, so surfaces have to be a little bit fluid, and that's why stuff like that happens. I can forgive that, but it's just a little bit clunky and a little bit slow, and the textures are really quite boring.
Did you play it with an N64 controller?
Yes.
Oh, right. Because that was the perfect game for that, because it had the trigger and the gun mechanic, as well as the ability to strafe and move. It felt at the time like it was a match made in heaven.
Well, I used to play a very flash way indeed, because you could actually play it with two controllers.
Ah, you weren't that guy. Nobody liked that guy.
I'll tell you, what's kind of let it down is, of course, although the analog stick on the 64 controller was, you know, a bit of a paradigm shift for gaming.
Buzzing.
You know, there was only one, and it was in the middle. And when I was playing it this last time, you really want a second one now. My thumbs have got so used to being in control of two sticks.
It had the yellow buttons, didn't it? Which were the strafing ones. Now I remember just thinking, this is absolutely perfect, because when people were talking about how Nintendo would develop the control when they moved on to the new console for the GameCube, I was thinking, no, don't change it, don't touch it, do what PlayStation do and just bring the same one out over and over and over and over again. And actually, the GameCube one actually did work slightly better, because that had two options of moving things, and then for Wii it's totally thrown the rest out the window. And you think, well, how would they do it again? How would GoldenEye change, and how would GoldenEye work in the, you know, the 21st century, that would be worth playing, that would be worth sort of bringing back all those memories for?
Well, what's it, you know, as far as control goes, and I know a lot of PC gamers always say you can't play first-person shooters on a console, it's just not got the control, bloody blah, bloody blah, blah, blah. But Metroid, despite its incredible, well, Metroid Prime, I think, is the one I'm thinking of for the Wii, despite all its tedious long boss battles, the actual controls on that were so fluid. So you're moving around with the nunchuck, and you're using the Wii remote to look around and strafe and all that sort of stuff. That was really, really good. No, I don't think the control thing's an issue. What is slightly more concerning, I suppose, is what made GoldenEye unique at the time was it was a game that was pretty much put together by people who'd never put a game together before. And so there were no commercial pressures as such on them. It was just to design a game that they thought represented the film and was good fun to play. And nowadays, particularly as it's been developed by a different developer, a completely different development team, there's going to be so much commercial pressure on it. You know, is it going to have Space Marines in it, for example? You know, it's not going to be the same game. It's not going to come from the same place. It might turn out to be brilliant, but, you know, it's like so many sequels of films. You know, if it's not the same team put back together, if it's different actors, and, you know, it never quite works.
Yeah, and the interesting thing as well is that GoldenEye, people won't remember this, but GoldenEye the game came out at the same time that Tomorrow Never Dies the film came out. Now, that wouldn't be allowed to happen now. You couldn't have a game that was based on a film that came out a couple of years previously, and actually there's a new game coming out and the current game is not based upon it. That wouldn't be allowed to happen now, would it, with synergy, corporate synergy and media synergy and all that nonsense?
Well, you know, part of that was caused by the fact that back in the day, there always used to be such a big delay between American releases of stuff, particularly from Nintendo, whose prime focus was on was outside of Japan, was America, and Europe always came second best, because GoldenEye was out in America, I think, a good 9 months before it came out on the N64 in the UK, and there used to be terrible problems converting games from whatever the NTSC, the American system, through to PAL to run on a British television, which you don't have anymore because most people's televisions can deal with both signals. That the actual sort of converters in the machines have got better and cheaper and quicker. So, you know, that's not a problem anymore. So you don't have to worry about recoding the whole thing. So, you know, I don't think that probably would happen to the same extent as it happened over that. But of course, it wouldn't be allowed to either. The game would be rush released if it was tied into a film.
I tell you what, should we do some business news?
No.
Yeah, well, we'll do it anyway. Video game retailer Game Group announced the abrupt departure of its chief exec. Today, it revealed its annual profits dropped by almost a third for a very long time. The video game industry appears to have been recession-proof, no longer the case, and she's left as a result. But let's move on to more important news, because Amanda Flowers claims that falling from her Nintendo Wii Fit board has turned her into a sex addict, and she requires 10 sex sessions a day to satisfy her desires.
What? falling off it?
She was doing something on the balance board and she fell off it, and as a result she got nerve damage. She was diagnosed as persistent sexual arousal syndrome, resulting in a heightened state of arousal. She told the Daily Star, "It began as a twinge down below before surging through my body." I can't read any more of that. So that's Amanda Flowers, Nintendo's Wii Fit turned me into a sex addict, reads the headline in the Star.
Is there a phone number on there?
Okay, so we're up to the review section of the podcast. You're listening to A Link to the Cast. Thanks for doing.
Actually, Mick, I'm just going to interrupt you there, because when I finally got round to editing this podcast, you managed to get an interview with Laszlo about Red Dead Redemption. So we're going to put it in now, because it's out in a couple of days. So I'm handing back over to you 2 days ago, or something like that. Bye.
You're listening to A Link to the Cast. Thanks for downloading us via iTunes or the website www.alinktothecast.co.uk. Now, without a doubt, one of the most hotly anticipated games of 2010 is Red Dead Redemption. It's out now, depending on when you're listening to this, and it's available on the Xbox 360 and also PlayStation 3. It's the latest offering from Rockstar Games, and to tell us all about it is the man from Grand Theft Auto. He's also one of the producers of this title. It's Laszlo. Welcome to the show, pal. It's good to have you back.
How are you?
Dude, I'm good. Always great to have you, and welcome back to the show. First of all, give us the big sell then. What is Red Dead Redemption all about?
Wow. Well, it's difficult to describe the game because it's so massive, but in a sentence or two, it's an open world Western shooter. So if you play like a Grand Theft Auto game, it's an open world where you can just go do whatever you want, but there's these exciting missions and stuff you can do. Red Dead is set around 1910 or so, just as the West is kind of dying and technology and the government are encroaching on, you know, the people of mid-America and the frontier that don't want to be, they don't want to be bothered or regulated. And so you have the story of John Marston, who is a partially reformed outlaw who's trying to chase down his former gang. And you travel across this massive map that stretches from mountains to Mexico, across plains. It's a truly massive game, and there's a ton of action in it where you get into duels, you have huge shootouts with armies at a fort. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it looks incredible. I mean, Rockstar like to push the boundaries with each new title. What can Rockstar fans in particular get excited about here?
Well, you know, Rockstar never releases a game that we're not 100% happy with, or a game that we really, really want to play. I think one of the testaments to our games, especially Red Dead Redemption, is, you know, we've got guys there who have been literally playing this game for a year and a half to make our trailers or whatever, that still every day when they come in and fire it up are really excited to be messing about with this game. And as you know, there's a lot of video games out there that after a few hours you're just done with it. But our games are so massive and there's so much detail that you're constantly exploring. And that's one of the reasons I think the Old West as a setting is great for this game, because it's sort of the Old West, but it's becoming the New West. And there's such a sense of adventure in it. You know, we paid a lot of attention to the horses in the game. We did motion capture for the horses. There's buffalo. There's all kinds of animals running around that you can shoot and skin. All the weapons are based on authentic weapons, you know, from the period. And we paid such special attention to all the tiny details so that you're constantly exploring, discovering new things, and worked hard to make the gameplay an incredible experience.
What sort of choices does John Marston, the main character, get to make as the game goes on?
Well, it's fun because you really have to think while you're playing this game, what am I going to do in this situation? And you've got fame and honor in the game, and every person that you interact with, you kind of have to make a decision. If you're riding down the road and a woman screams, "Help, I'm being robbed," well, you can help the guy's robber, or you can help her out and shoot the robbers. Based on those interactions, people will react to you differently. If your fame goes quite high or your honor quite low, you know, when you ride into a town, people will say snarky things to you. If you've been a bad guy, they'll challenge you to duels, versus if you've been a really nice guy, you know, people will help you out. They'll give you things. Some of the battles in the game are just incredible when you've got a cannon and you're raining terror down on people that are trying to run into your fort, as well as, you know, the multiplayer. We've done a ton of work on the multiplayer so that it's unlike any other multiplayer that's been done, because it's a huge, open, massive world that you and your friends can form a posse and go explore. You can go hunting together. Then you can go encounter another posse and get into a huge death match. Or we just announced some co-op downloadable content. When the game comes out, you can download some really fun co-op levels that we think are a new way to look at multiplayer.
I mean, well, let's touch on that, because people might be surprised to see there's actually a multiplayer option here, but it's not your regular multiplayer fodder, is it?
No, you know, and like I was touched on before, there are things in multiplayer in a lot of ways that have kind of gotten into a rut. You know, I've played multiplayer games since the early 90s, you know, starting with Doom and Quake and all those and head-to-head. And I think, you know, with Grand Theft Auto 4, we did this to an extent, but with Red Dead Redemption, we really wanted it to feel like you and your friends were exploring things and that you weren't in this closed map. You know, so many multiplayer games, you're in this little enclosed area or this little enclosed town, and once you sort of get to know that town, you know, you got guys that are massively good at it and you keep getting clipped off. Whereas with the multiplayer of Red Dead Redemption, we have this thing called free roam, and you and your friends can roam in a town and or a gang hideout and battle all those bad guys together. Or like I said, you can go and take your horses up on a vista and just shoot at birds. It's like it's a very, very social way of multiplayer and gaming.
I mean, we've touched on the gameplay. Let's move on to the graphics as well, which, of course, if anyone's seen any of the sort of previews or the trailers online, they look absolutely incredible. In terms of how you've built that, have you done it in like a sandbox style?
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's funny. You put somebody down in front of Red Dead Redemption, and they begin to look around, and they see a mountain in the distance. Can I go there? And you say yes. And so they take their horse and they're riding up these trails into a mountain, and then all of a sudden they're in snow. One of my favorite things, to be honest, is the way that nighttime is portrayed in the game, and the way that when you walk into a town and there's, you know, torches and flames and the stars look absolutely incredible. You know, you can pitch a tent in the game and save at night, see the stars, and you can be riding along a mesa with this beautiful sunset, and you'll see some guys that have pitched camp, and they'll invite you over. Say, you know, do you want to sit for a spell? You go over and sit down, and one of them will start to tell a story about some rumors that he's heard, and he's telling a story about stuff that you've done, like a huge battle that was at a ranch, and he's saying, you know, I heard this happened up at this ranch, and you're sort of sitting there passively listening to a guy telling a story, and sometimes he's getting stuff completely wrong. So it's those little touches that make it feel like a huge, massive open world game.
Yeah, we're talking to Laszlo, the voice you're hearing there, on a link to the cast from Rockstar Games, talking about the new game on 360 and PS3. It's Red Dead Redemption. And Laszlo, I've got to ask, how close is Red Dead Redemption to utilizing, you know, like the full spec, the full capabilities of the 360 and the PS3 graphically? I mean, in terms of processing power as well.
Well, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but we do our best to redline the Xbox and PS3 to beyond their capability, and then work hard to dial that back. The next gen consoles have been fantastic in that, unlike, you know, the PS2, there's so much more that you can do, and that's what was nice about doing this game set in a rural environment and a huge Western, is that you can really take advantage of the processing power and, you know, the space that you're allotted. You know, there's no way that you could do this with the previous generation of consoles. And I think it gives you a lot more of a cinematic feel. Well, with Red Dead Redemption, even if you look at the trailers, go on rockstargames.com and look at some of the trailers for the game. I've seen people watch them and say, this is a game? I mean, it looks so good, and the graphics are so good, that people presume when they first watch it that it's a movie. I look forward to even the next generation of consoles, whatever the Xbox 780 or whatever they end up doing, because it just opens up so many more possibilities. But I think people can get sucked into a bit of a negative space sometimes with that, because they've got all this processing power and space. That doesn't necessarily mean a good game. There's a lot of games that have beautiful graphics, and the story is garbage, and the gameplay is garbage. And we work hard, and I think we did this, you know, no matter what the platform is, whether it's you've got just a tiny bit of memory on a Nintendo DS with Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, or you've got a massive amount of memory on an Xbox 360 or PS3, it's the gameplay that resonates with people.
If you're honest, is there an argument which says that partly this game is essentially GTA, but set in the Wild West?
No, it's something different. I mean, you know, Grand Theft Auto was made, the primary studio for that is Rockstar North in Scotland, and this game was made by Rockstar San Diego, which those guys are obviously quite close to the desert and the plains, and did a lot of research out making sure that all of that looks quite authentic. They're similar in that there's an open world. They're similar that they're both a ton of fun to play with, and that the graphics and the physics are incredible. But there's a lot of things in Red Dead Redemption that haven't been in any of our other games, because we have just invented them. New gameplay mechanics, new ways to play the game, new story, ways you interact with the story. You know, like I said, everything you do in Red Dead Redemption affects the outcome of how people in the streets treat you. You know, there's hundreds of characters on the streets of Grand Theft Auto. There's hundreds of characters on the streets of Red Dead Redemption, except for Red Dead, this time we tried to give every character a name, to have characters, when they pass each other in the street, they'll greet each other by name, ask how each other's doing. Characters in Red Dead wake up, go to work during the day, will go to the bar afterwards, and then stumble home drunk and go to bed when it starts to get dark in the game. I mean, there's a lot of things in Red Dead Redemption that we've taken some of the core elements of gameplay and open world mechanics from Grand Theft Auto and taken it up to a completely new level.
I take it there, you're confirming that this game is nothing like Quick Draw McGraw, the arcade classic.
I would... Quick Draw McGraw... I haven't even played Quick Draw McGraw. I do like some arcade classics, though. It's similar in that it's a game, and that we hope you play till your hand hurts.
Laszlo, as ever, it's an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and we look forward to playing Red Dead Redemption. We will review it in a future podcast. Thank you for your time. We'll speak to you very soon. TV review section of the podcast. You're listening to A Link to the Cast. Thanks for downloading us. Got three reviews on the way. I'm talking about Red Steel 2, which is currently available on Wii. We're going to do Lost Planet 2, available on PS3 and the 360. And Brian Shelf is going to be talking about the SNES version of Mario Kart, which is available now to download on Virtual Console. It's been available in the States and in Japan for ages. You can now get your hands on it for Wii. And Brian Shelf is going to tell you why you need to do that very same thing. Rick, though, I'm going to start with you because you've been playing Lost Planet 2, the PlayStation 3 version. Tell us all about it.
That's right, yeah. Well, Lost Planet 2 is a third-person action shooter, and it's set on a distant planet of EDN 3, and that's really all you need to know in terms of plot basics, because the rest of the plot's kind of ridiculous, and it ultimately boils down to you with your big guns and stuff. You just go running around this alien world and kill aliens in order to get energy or score or points or however you want to kind of label it, really. Now, the original was set in like Arctic ruins and tundra environments, so it was very bleak. You know, everything was covered in snow, but it would allow the aliens to just sort of erupt from underneath the snow and come at you, and it proved quite an interesting next-gen title, because it was very early for the Xbox. It came out on the Xbox quite close to release time, and it was delayed for about 2 years before the PS3. But what it did was it provided a big contrast between your enemies and, you know, the environment that you're in, and it looked quite garish at times. But what they've done this time around, you're fighting on a completely different side of the planet. You're in the very fashionable jungle environments, and kind of just that simple shift in the dynamic and the setting of the game changes it so much, because now the aliens can be hiding in bushes, they can be up trees, they could be, you know, from cliffs. It's suddenly a lot more intimidating an environment for these massive and quite frankly brutal aliens to be hiding in. They're not humanoid, they're very kind of arachnid-esque for the most part. But you know, in doing that, they've basically changed the balance of the game. They've given the aliens kind of more of an element of a surprise, and they can overwhelm you quite a bit quicker. But the way that they've kind of balance that out again, and this is the big kind of selling point for Lost Planet 2, is basically they've made everything in the game multiplayer. The whole campaign, as well as the extra multiplayer modes that you had in the first one, they all make a return, but the campaign itself has been designed to be played as a four-player online co-op. Yeah, exactly. And for that, I absolutely can't wait. I'll come back to that in a minute, because, like I say, the multiplayer, it's got the usual sort of gameplay modes, your team deathmatch, your post-battle. The game has a very cool dynamic that when you're playing the actual single-player missions, you basically find these data posts and you kind of unlock them. And as they burst out, they provide little short-term radar bases, so that then you've got an active radar around you, so you can see where the aliens are or where your teammates might be. But once you stray out of that, you've got to then find another data post. Well, in terms of multiplayer, that just works as like capture the flag and HQ modes and stuff. But it's cool little twists on it all throughout.
Yeah, I mean, is there enough difference between that and it sounds like what you're describing, very similar titles that are available already. Is there enough difference in there, a point of difference that would say, you know, this is what makes Lost Planet 2 particularly different?
Yeah, well, I'll come back to the campaign mode, because I think that really is what makes Lost Planet 2 so much different to anything else that you can get out there. But like I say, that everything's been designed for a multiplayer experience, and like the other game modes, as I don't know, capture the acrid egg or gather the acrid eggs and stuff, you know, because the acrid is the name of the aliens. It just provides a different sort of twist, its own unique angle on it. But when we play the actual campaign, and Lost Planet was a big thing for having massive and quite overwhelmingly huge bosses, well, because they've managed to break it and make it a four-player co-op experience, they've basically managed to design the levels and the bosses for that kind of a gameplay as well. So so now they're even more massive. You know, you might have to have three guys trying to take down the limbs, or, you know, dismember one side of an alien while you basically concentrate on the head, because that's where you at, the only point you can do the damage. But of course, you're only going to get to be able to shoot the head once it's fallen over or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a kind of different team dynamic on it, and they've really pulled out all the stops on this, because some of the bosses on this are so huge that you can only actually kill them by blasting your way inside of them and then shooting up the internal organs. Now, it doesn't look as gory as your likes of Devil May Cry and stuff. It's very arcadey in feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's but it's very unique and very brilliantly designed for itself. And of course, the Mech Warrior kind of virtual suits make a return as well. So like you could be in an industrial environment and find an old suit that's been laid waste. You can repair it and climb into it, and suddenly you've got like a 15-foot tall robot to walk around in, and you guys can hop on the side and control their other independent weapons and stuff. So it's a very cool, unique multiplayer experience. Now
it doesn't sound that unique, because it sounds a little bit like Monster Hunter.
Well, Monster Hunter's been around for a long time, and you know, it's a big PSP title, certainly in Japan. That's the sold waves, and there's no doubt that this has been, you know, heavily influenced by the success that has seen. But you know, I think the setting and the sort of future element of it maybe distinguishes it that and from that respect. And of course, it's a true next gen title, so it's got its high-def graphics, and you know, it's a proper network title.
Oh, right. No need to start bashing the Wii.
I'm not trying to do that. I was rubbing that against the PSP, perhaps, because, you know, like I say, it's been out for their ages, and really, this does look a whole different class from that.
Brilliant. So I love the fact you did a review for 5 minutes before the point at which you said that you could actually climb inside monsters and blast your way back out.
Brilliant.
I'd have gone right at the top with that one. It's Lost Planet 2. It's available on 360 and PS3. Rick's been playing the PS3
Can
version,
Can I just butt in here before we say what's going to stop me playing? Because essentially, there's one sort of minor niggling point that I can't test at the moment, and that's because the game's not properly released
yet.
Exactly. I can't actually go on and play with a team. And I you know, playing this single player, the AI buddies, they really don't compare, because, you know, when you come up against a massive boss, the boss is going to target the person doing the most damage. And once you've worked out how to take a boss down, it's invariably you that gets hammered repeatedly by the bosses. So,
well, in that case, Rick, let's say this. Next time that we record a cast, after the release date, depending on when people are hearing this, after the release date, once people are online and the servers are up and running, I'm going to ask you to do a quick update in terms of how that multiplayer works out for you.
That'd
but what will make you what will make you stop playing Lost Planet 2?
Well, currently, it's the fact that my AI buddies really ain't that good. You know, I just get spammed by every boss that I can come up against. But I've got the feeling that it's got a recipe for something special online there. I just can't test it out yet.
Absolutely. And Rick, we'll definitely do a follow-up review of that, just on that multiplayer element, because that co-op mode does sound great. Yeah. I just love the idea of four of you climbing into a monster and then just blasting your way back out.
Exactly. Dislocating his jaw and then all piling in through the mouth. Unbelievable.
Nice one. That's Rick playing Lost Planet 2 on PlayStation 3, also available on Xbox 360, that don't forget. Now, over the past month or so, I have been playing Red Steel 2 on Wii. On Wii, which is the French word for boring.
I think that every time you say it, ennui, doesn't it mean ennui? Here we go. Ennui, from the French word for annoyance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so...
Or it means there's insufficient room for young animals to play.
Well, there you go. Very good. Right, can I continue now? I've been playing Red Steel 2 on Wii, and it's, it's a sequel of sorts to one of the first games which was available on Wii when it first came out. I can't say it now without thinking of it. Basically, the first game was sort of pitched as this game where you could sort of run and gun, but also you could use swords as well, and it was fraught with problems. The sword fighting didn't work at all, but the overall game was actually okay, but the sword fighting bits were actually so frustrating. It was one of those where you could think, you know what, I'm going to leave this, but Ubisoft have stuck with it, and they brought out Red Steel 2. They've changed the style of it completely. They've moved away from modern-day Japan, and they've shifted it to sort of a samurai Wild West world. It's quite hard to describe, but it's very much sort of a cowboy film with a sort of Japanese twist. And it's also become all about cell shading, and it just appears that the Wii is much, much more capable of holding these graphics and running these graphics smoothly and at a great rate. So graphically, I have to say, this is absolutely outstanding. It's one of the best looking games on Wii, and almost just sort of playing it and having it on the Wii makes you think, crikey, what have I been missing out on the Wii for the last 3 years or so, 3.5 years in fact, because graphically absolutely superb. It also comes bundled with Wii Motion Plus and only works with Wii Motion Plus as well. It basically means as well that you can do one-to-one sword fighting movements. Does that work? I would say Probably, yes, it does. It is quite satisfying. The gameplay works like this. You get a set number of tasks, and you go out and about. You follow the maps in this sort of dusty Wild West stroke Japanese world, and you come across and you fight a number of foes, and you perform tasks. The start of the game is very much about the teaching you how the game itself works, how the controls work, and basically putting you up against loads and loads of enemies one after the other. And the first hour or so, you sort of feel maybe, despite the fact the graphics are great, a little bit underwhelmed, because it almost feels like you're walking into area after set, area after set, area, and, you know, fighting 1, 2, 3 foes, moving on 1, 2, 3 foes, taking on a new challenge, then moving on 1, 2, 3 foes. It feels a little bit like that. And then after an hour, you sort of venture into a new part of the city and the story starts to ratchet up. You sort of get the sense of sort of what the whole thing is about, and you get a sense of the scale as well. Now, bearing in mind the graphics look good, once you get that sense of scale too, you think, this is actually a really good game. Now, there are sort of a couple of not too great points. The loading times for me are a little bit too big. What you find is you walk from area to area, you come across these massive doors. What they've done, they've tried to sort of hide the loading times behind the opening animation of these doors, which for anyone who's now thinking of Resident Evil, the original Resident Evil game, fear not, it's nothing like that. And maybe the loading times are possibly no more than sort of 4 or 5 seconds, but they do come along quite often. As you move in, you meet these foes and you take them on. Now, you have to learn a number of combos and attacks. Now, if you're the sort of person who really looks to play a game non-stop, start to finish, day in, day out, it can be quite difficult to sort of remember all those particular combos. And there can be times where maybe there's 8 that you've learned, and actually you'd come across a foe and really you could have done with, you know, the third one and the fourth one. You needed to remember them, but maybe you can't remember it. The ability to go back and relearn those, that for me at the moment, as far as I can tell, does not exist. Or what you do get when the loading screens come on occasionally is a reminder of some of the skills that you've learned. But I mean, that's a small negative point, I would say. One of the other negative points is that the foes that you face, a lot of them are very similar. A lot of them are sort of armored. So for that reason, you can sort of see why they would come across as similar. But sometimes it does feel a little bit like you're facing the same enemies over and over again. The other option of shooting is still there as well. But I would say, you know what? If it's not the most effective way of killing somebody, which in this game it isn't, it really encourages you to get out and about and start slashing the sword. Don't put it in, because you can have a guy running at you. You might pop him full of 4 or 5 bullets, and actually that's quite not enough to bring him down. What you need to do is slash him one round the head with the sword. And I think, well, maybe the gun didn't need to be there at all, I would say. In terms of the one-to-one combat, I think it works really well. This is one of those games you almost really have to sort of get into it. You will work up a bit of a sweat, because it doesn't let you just, you know, tap with the hand. Because it's Wii Motion Plus, it's looking for big fluid movements. I'm doing the big fluid movements as I do that. And you really do build up a sweat, and you really do feel like you're getting into it. Control-wise, it works really well. One-to-one controls do work really well. Graphically, excellent. Gameplay, good. Now, there is something in there which I really like, and I'm hoping to see more before the very end of the game, is there's sort of a couple of more adventure-style moments, almost puzzles. You know, you come to a gate, and you need to drop 2 ladders down, so you need to find the ropes to cut with the sword to drop the ladders down so you can move on to the next level. I'm hoping to see a little bit more of that just as I enter the final levels of the game. Apart from that, though, it's a really enjoyable experience. It's a very surprising experience as well, particularly if you played Red Steel, the original one, and you were so disappointed by it. This covers up a lot of the problems which it created, and it's done in such a strange style, in the fact it's like a Wild Western Japanese game, that it's certainly something which I think people could invest in. You know, it's not too difficult. There are a number of difficulty modes on there. Graphically, it looks great. You know, it's quite hard to find too many faults with it.
Good stuff. It sounds good.
There was one thing, though, that for me didn't quite work, and it's related to the motion controls. And there's a couple of times where you're going around and you find safes, and you have to turn the safe to find the point at which it clicks, and then you press A, and then you turn the safe a little further to find the next point that it clicks to open up the safe, basically. Now, in a couple of times with the Wii Motion Plus adapter, I could only turn the safe halfway before it turned itself back, even though I was trying to make... So there were a couple of times in the game where the Wii Motion Plus adapter didn't quite give me that one-to-one I was looking for, but that was not, I have to say, as part of the sword fighting, which for me worked really well.
Excellent. Yeah, because a lot of, I mean, the Wii initially when it first came out was sold quite a lot by a lot of to a lot of people on the clip in the trailer of holding the sword against that fella's neck, and when a lot of people got it, went, no, it's rubbish.
Yeah, and I think because the run and gun sections on Red Steel were actually really good, but actually in this game, I don't think they're worth being there at all. And again, graphically, it just looks absolutely fantastic. What would make me stop playing this game?
Oh, yeah, I should have asked you that.
Yeah, you should have done. Well, I'm going to ask it myself because I've become re-obsessed with Mario Kart Wii Online. Oh, it's got bad again.
Chris and Steve.
Yeah, got some friends of ours who regularly play on it have started challenging. You know, the ring up. We're about to go on Mario Kart Online. Now, bearing in mind, Mario Kart came out 3 years ago now, so it's an incredible amount of time. If you go online, you will still find 12 players in every single race. It's absolutely incredible. And I don't know if it's building a sort of a resurgence or renaissance, or these are just new people who are finding it all the time. But Mario Kart Wii keeps drawing me back. Although I must say, Red Steel 2 is one of those games you can sort of start playing and play for sort of 2.5-3 hours. So there's my review of Red Steel 2, available now on Wii. It's been out and about, depending on when you're listening to this, for a couple of weeks, actually, so do get your hands on it if you get the chance. Now, Brian Shelf has been playing a game which is available on Virtual Console. It is a game for which he has been singing praises for probably, what, touching 20 years or something like that? Brian Shelf, take it away.
Oh, well, it's Super Mario Kart, and we've had to wait absolutely ages and ages for it. With you just talking about Mario Kart Wii there, it was the birth of that whole nest of games, and I fervently believed in all the time we've been playing it. I love Super Mario Kart Wii. I think it's really good. I think it's one of the strongest in the series. I had loads of problems with Mario Kart 64. Didn't like it. I know that's a lot of people's favourites. I thought Double Dash was okay. Some good courses, some bad courses. Super Mario Kart Wii, I think, really got the balance just perfectly right. And great multiplayer action, and the online stuff was fantastic. There was a couple of handheld versions as well. Mario Super Circuit and, of course, the DS, Mario Kart DS, which was also good because of its online play. But, you know, my heart always stayed with the original. I think about two to three years of my life that never came out of the slots. That was it. That was all we ever played. It was like, sit down, right, quick GP, play GP. And you could lose hours and hours and hours to it. It's very different when you go back now to what we're used to now. Little simple things like the other people you're racing against. First of all, there's a massively limited number of characters. There's only 8 to choose from, including Koopa, who I don't think we get anymore. People race Toad now instead of Koopa, but Koopa was the racer of choice when I was playing this first time around. The baddies don't use the same weapons as you. They only have one weapon. I say the baddies, your opponents. They only have one weapon that they ever use. Like Donkey Kong throws bananas. Luigi can go invisible. Princess Peach drops little cakes out of her bottom, seemingly. And when you run into the cakes, it turns you miniature like lightning. There's only one place to get weapons at any point around the track. And once you've got a weapon block, it's gone. So you've basically got to be really careful. You're racing 5 laps because the courses are so short. There's things like the feather, which never made a reappearance. The feather you could use to jump bits of the track and create your own shortcuts, or take really daring shortcuts on some of the ghost ones, that if you went really straight and used the feather and jumped, you could cut out half the track. But if you missed, you got picked up and dropped back in. So there's collecting coins, which I think only reappeared in Mario Kart Super Circuit, and the more coins you get, the faster you go. And it was just phenomenal. And the design of the courses was so incredible that for first time players, everyone can bounce around. There's loads of space. But, you know, when you really got into it, you know, it was all about getting exactly the right line and timing your skids perfectly. On some of the later courses, you're never out of a power slide. You're always just edging round, facing almost the wrong way, sliding around the course, and that was the way to win. It was kind of different as well, because actually the mechanics of the game meant that you weren't turning the car, you were actually turning the track underneath the car, which was sort of a cheat to make it sort of work, basically.
So was it Mode 7?
Mode 7 graphics, first started by Star Fox, I think, was the first one to have it in, or whatever it was called when it was over here. However, going back, well, it's just not dated that well. The graphics are absolutely atrocious. It's amazing when you revisit these games and you look at them now with the eyes you've got and what you've seen in the meantime, and you just think, I was massively impressed by this game. It's like, it's terrible. The pixels all over the place and just the detail on the sprites. And also, you know, sometimes I get properly annoyed with Virtual Console things because they had an opportunity here to go back to what is in essence a great game. I've still enjoyed playing it through. I've still enjoyed racing the courses. Rainbow Road on that is still one of the best courses ever. A real challenge for the properly skilled driver. They had an opportunity possibly here to, you know, redo it, put it out not as a Virtual Console, but as a piece of WiiWare, you know, update the graphics ever so slightly and make it online so you can race online with people, because it's not that much fun racing against the artificial intelligence people. You need someone else to be playing it against to really truly enjoy it. And of course, because if you've only got it on your console, you can't take it around to a mate's to play, you know, they have to come, you know, it's just a missed opportunity really, which is a shame. But it's a brilliant game, and having said that, it's what, 800 points, which is what, about £7, if that. I don't even know how much it is anymore. About 700 quid. About £7. So, you know, you can't complain to download it. And of course, it downloads in like about 0.3 seconds. It's like, what? Games used to be that small. So, no, very good. I still champion it as my best gaming experience, but perhaps not the best game ever made compared to the games that are around now.
Yeah, does this sort of follow on from our conversation about GoldenEye a little earlier, in that it was a really great game, but actually, was it a really great game? Well, in your head that it was, but maybe in the moment now, it maybe doesn't appear to be so.
It's still an amazing game experience for those who had it at the time, but anyone coming along now will go, oh, what? But you've got to remember that it spawned a whole new genre, and everybody wanted to make a Mario Kart, and I don't think anyone else has actually managed to make a Mario Kart.
What would make you stop playing this game?
Frustration. Just that kind of nostalgic frustration that you think,
There we go. So you have been warned. It's worth having a look at. Certainly there'll be people listening to this who've never played the original.
Yeah, almost certainly. And
what would you advise them?
I don't know. I'd advise them dig it out, see what you reckon.
There we go.
£7. That's can't get wrong.
Brian Shelf reviewing Mario Kart, the SNES version, now available on Wii console. You're listening to A Link to the Cast. Okay, well, we'll wrap up with the, I was going to say mailbag again, but it's not. It's posts that people have sent to us via Twitter.
What about or letterbox? Mailbox?
No, mailbox. Jimbo Agogo. Did you see the rage-inducing video game debate from the Alan Titchmarsh show? Charlie Brooker posted it on here. That's Twitter. It's so bad. You know what? I did see that. It was posted by Charlie Brooker, who's a well-known TV personality and also a bit of a gaming aficionado. It was quite a cringe-worthy video game should be banned conversation. Don't know if you saw that, Brian.
I've seen bits and pieces of it. It's Kelvin McKenzie, isn't it?
No, it's Nick Ferrari is the guy.
Oh, right, yeah.
Who presents a radio show in London.
I believe the term is shock jock.
Hey, and also on Twitter, Dave Taylor, just watched Avatar, thought it was really good, breathtaking at points, predictable, but a really good watch. Very good, Dave. I would say if you're going to get it on DVD, make sure you get it on Blu-ray. Watching it on DVD is a little bit pointless. And Sam Potter had an interesting lunchtime, having two old ladies competing against each other to earn my affections. No thanks, was funny though. Thank you, Sam. Keep your posts on Twitter and on Facebook. You can join us on Facebook. Just go on there and type in A Link to the Cast and you'll find us nice and easy. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's wrap up the headline competition, which I announced at the start of the program. Did you play along at home? No, obviously you didn't. Nobody ever does, but it's a little bit of a laugh. It goes like this. Motor racing legend Carl Fogarty could become the World Superbike Champion for the 5th, 6th, 7th, or even 100th time as he stars in a new video game. It's called SBKX Superbike World Championship, available on PS3, Xbox 360, and PC DVD. Now, I wanted a pun on the fact that he was from Blackburn, which is a fairly unglamorous location, and Carl Fogarty is from Blackburn, and he's getting his own video game. So we're looking for something which will be related to that. I tell you what, Rick, I'm going to turn to you first. Give me your answer.
It's, I don't know, I can't even believe I'm going to say this. It's Xbox 360 Bagum. Does that make sense to you?
Brilliant. Rick there with his Lancashire pun. Do you get that, Brian?
Yeah.
I'm going to go for, this is embarrassing as well. I'm going to go for Ducatwee, because he used to be a Ducati driver. So I'm going to Ducatwee. And it's, the game's not even available on Wii, but that's what I'm going for.
I've written down on a piece of paper, bike goes to Fogarty, goes to Blackburn, that's the goes to her arrows, and I've written the word wangpipe, that's all I've written. I'm not with it today at all. What? I don't know. Blackburn. No.
I got this from the This Is Lancashire website. They've gone with the headline, Blackburn Racing Legends starring in video game. Ah, why didn't we think of that?
Well, I'll tell you what, my favourite headline is a link that someone sent me today, which is, I'll send it to you so you can put it up on the Twitter feed. It's an amazing story. I've sent it around, hold the front page. The story is from the Salisbury Journal, and the headline reads, Dog Injures Nose. There you go. Big news in Salisbury, or Salisbury, whatever you want to call it.
Brilliant stuff. If you live in Salisbury, maybe you injured that dog's nose, do contact us via our Twitter feed. You can find it via the website, www.alinktothecast.co.uk. I don't actually want people to do that who live in Salisbury, but I was using it as a way of getting people to go to the website.
Apparently, the police have got a couple of leads.
Oh
dear.
Next time around on the podcast, football, because Rick and Brian are going to play FIFA World Cup on Wii and on PS3. So we're going to have a review of two halves, one from a seasoned FIFA pro gamer, that's Rick, and one from a FIFA novice. That's Brian. Also,
and football hater, that needs to be mentioned.
Absolutely. And we're going to be talking as well about Street Fighter Super on Xbox 360 as well, if we get time round to do that as well. That's all to come on the next episode of A Link to the Cast, which will be with you, depending on when you're listening to this, yesterday.
Hey!
But of course, that breaking news cannot beat the headline competition. Da-da-da-dum. Here comes the music for the headline competition.
Now, actually, I should do some proper headline music, shouldn't I?
Should we do some business news?
Sorry, I had to do a huge burp there. Apologies for that.
Should we do...
There was more, sorry. Right, let's carry on.